Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Governor Gavin Newsom has issued an emergency declaration to fund wildfire prevention actions in communities at risk. Find out which local communities his order includes on today's show. Love triumphed over hate at two East County high schools, where a rainbow of protesters outnumbered picketers from a notorious hate group, and we'll have the tales. We'll also have news about reactions to an arson fire at an Escondido mosque. Then on Crime Beat, hear about a sexual predator approved for release in Hacumba Hot Springs, and a warning from the sheriff about an older man who tried to lure a 9-year-old girl into a silver convertible in Santee. KNSJ is back on the air, as you can hear, after an ice storm damaged the station's transmitter, but your help is needed to recoup thousands of dollars in emergency repair costs. Hear how you can help people-powered radio on today's show. We also have some health alerts for you, including a recall on avocados due to listeria, hantavirus found in rural Boulevard, and a mumps case at San Diego State University. Learn how California legislators are looking to address the college admission cheating scandal and prevent it from happening again in our public universities. Plus, hear how you can volunteer to become a literacy tutor for immigrants who want to learn to speak English. On the second half of our show today, our newsmaker interview is with Bob Frank. He's an attorney who has filed a lawsuit against the City of San Diego on behalf of disabled residents over dockless scooters and bicycles blocking access in public areas. Then on Destination East County, we'll have top events coming up in April, including Earth Day celebrations, classic car and airplane shows, a rodeo, Western Days parade, and many more fun and festive happenings all in San Diego's East County. From Public News Service, hear about a bill in the state legislature that seeks to ban cosmetics with toxic ingredients known to cause cancer or reproductive harm from being sold in California. And finally, with springtime in the air, we'll be replaying Master Gardener Connie Beck's tips for attracting hummingbirds and butterflies to your garden. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Governor Gavin Newsom has proclaimed a state of emergency over wildfire dangers to, quote, protect the state's most vulnerable communities. The action expedites forest management projects with an aim to protect 200 communities most prone to fire risk. That includes 35 fuel reduction projects in areas identified by CAL FIRE, in a new report as at high risk for wildfires. In San Diego County, fuel breaks to protect Crest and Guatay are included. Crest was among the communities hardest hit by the devastating 2003 Cedar Fire. California has also launched a $50 million campaign on preparedness to build resiliency among vulnerable populations at the highest risk for natural disasters. Governor Newsom states, "The increasing wildfire risks we face as a state mean we simply can't wait until a fire starts in order to start deploying emergency resources. California needs sustained focus and immediate action in order to better protect our communities. Expediting clearing of brush and dead trees in forests is not without controversy. Some environmental groups have voiced concerns about habitat destruction and the potential for cleared chaparral to be replaced by grasses that could burn even more quickly. But in the wake of catastrophic fires, including the 2018 Paradise Fire, that killed 80 people and climate change fueling more severe fires, saving lives is at the forefront of the governor's priorities." The governor also announced the next phase of the Innovation Procurement Sprint, which seeks to give the best and brightest minds an opportunity to have their wildfire solutions tested and evaluated in the field. The governor ordered this sprint so that cutting-edge tools and technologies can be purchased to save lives and properties. Further, Newsom announced additional details on the $50 million California for All Emergency Preparedness Campaign. The campaign will provide $24 million in grants to community-based organizations to prepare residents for natural disasters, over $12 million to support community efforts to respond to disasters by dispatching expert disaster teams and expanding citizen emergency response teams, or CERT teams, and $13 million to help community groups develop linguistically and culturally appropriate public awareness and outreach campaign for the most vulnerable communities. The California Natural Resources Agency and Department of Conservation have also announced the award of $20 million in block grants for regional projects that improve forest health and increase fire resiliency. Finally, Governor Newsom's administration announced it will publish emergency alert and warning guidelines to help cities, counties, and the state coordinate communication with Californians during an emergency. This improvement aims to prevent another catastrophe like the Paradise Fire, when many residents received no warnings before a firestorm destroyed their community. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Love triumphed over hate at two East County high schools on March 25th. Westboro Baptist Church in Kansas has been designated as a hate group by the Anti-Defamation League and the Southern Poverty Law Center. The group has gained notoriety for protesting at funerals of U.S. soldiers and schoolchildren slain in mass shootings, as well as for hate messages targeting the LGBT community, Jews, and minorities. So when the group announced plans to picket El Cajon Valley High School and El Cajon and Monte Vista High School in Spring Valley, local residents organized a rainbow dance party at both locations. Only three Westboro picketers showed up in El Cajon, carrying signs bearing messages such as "God hates pride," "God hates America," and "God sent the shooter." In contrast, nearly 150 counter-protesters showed up clad in a rainbow of colors with signs such as "Live and Let Live" and "Love Trumps Hate," and music by Queen drowning out Westboro's hateful chants. When Westboro's trio of hate mongers left, a cheer arose from the crowd. A heavy police presence protected free speech rights for all and kept Westboro's picketers separated from student and rainbow dance party demonstrators by about 20 yards. At Monte Vista High School, an even larger crowd turned out, with some 200 counter-protesters and the rainbow dance party overwhelming Westboro's hateful words. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Danita Jinks.
An arson fire at the Darul Arkam Mosque in Escondido on March 24th has prompted heightened security at mosques throughout San Diego County, the Escondido Grapevine reports. Lieutenant Chris Lick with the Escondido Police Department says graffiti left behind by the suspect made reference to the shooting incident in New Zealand. The mass shooting at Christ Church New Zealand Mosque earlier this month killed 50 people. A caller reported the early morning fire at the Escondido Worship Center, which was put out with a fire extinguisher. Fortunately, no one was injured, although several people were inside engaged in religious activities at the time. The fire scorched a wall and caused smoke damage, temporarily canceling services. A fund to repair damage has been established at Launch Good. Lick said the fire is being investigated as both hate crime and arson. Federal and county law enforcement officers are investigating. A prayer vigil Sunday night drew an outpouring of support from community members. Civil rights organizations, including the American Civil Liberties Union, have denounced the crime. Religious leaders and elected officials have also spoken out in support of Muslims targeted in the blaze. 50th Congressional District candidate Amar Campa-Najjar, a Democrat, attended the vigil and issued a statement which reads, in part, "As a Christian and as an ally of the Muslim community, I joined Escondido's interfaith community in solidarity. We encircled a mosque with love after it was vandalized and nearly burned down. Thank you to the law enforcement officials who stood in solidarity and pledged to keep this community safe." He criticized his opponent, Republican Congressman Duncan D. Hunter, stating, "This happened in Congressman Hunter's district. Will he condemn those who did this? Will he stand in solidarity with the victims?" We asked Hunter's office to respond. Hunter spokesman Michael Harrison sent an email which reads, "Congressman Hunter condemns any acts of violence and appreciates and supports our law enforcement community in their investigation. Anybody found participating in these crimes should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law." Dustin Cron, executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations in San Diego, or CARE, has condemned the attack and asked anyone with information on the crime to please contact Escondido Police, adding, We stand in solidarity with our community members who attend the Islamic Center of Escondido. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
Ignoring tearful pleas from three people victimized as children by sexually violent predator Alan Earl James, San Diego Superior Court Judge Albert Haratunian III reaffirmed his decision to allow James to be released in Hocumba Hot Springs. By April 25th, James will be living at home on Old Highway 80 near Hocumba's airport. Facing public protests, the judge previously agreed to review his decision, but has now issued a final ruling finding that placement in Hocumba meets state legal requirements. Alan Earl James is 62 years old and has not been free since the 1980s. His convictions include crimes of kidnapping and forced sexual intercourse with minors, as well as child molestation and lewd conduct with a child under age 14. At least three of his victims live in San Diego County. James has been diagnosed with pedophilia disorder and designated a sexually violent predator who prosecutors have warned is likely to reoffend. But state hospital officials recommended his release after decades in prison and later a state mental hospital. He will be monitored under the conditional release program for eventual integration back into the community despite his serious crimes. Supervisor Diane Jacob issued a statement denouncing the judge's ruling. She says, "The high concentration of three monsters out east is outrageous," said Jacob. Recently, Supervisor Jacob sent a letter to State Attorney General Javier Becerra, asking him to investigate the disproportionate placement of sexually violent predators in East County's rural towns. James is the 10th sexually violent predator released in rural East County, and 9 of those have been placed in Hocumba, according to Jacob. Area residents have organized to oppose the releases, staging protests at the courthouse. KUSI News reports that the state's treatment program for sex offenders is 3 times more expensive than prison, yet there is no guarantee the treatments will work, and some released predators have been quick to reoffend. One pedophile released into Hocumba removed his ankle bracelet and sexually assaulted an elderly woman in her home nearby, giving substance to residents' fears. Also troubling is that law enforcement response times in rural areas of our county are far slower than in urban areas, commonly averaging 30 minutes for even the most serious calls in which a life is immediately at risk. So if an offender does commit a new crime, rural residents are less apt to get help quickly even if they are able to dial 911. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is John Fistier.
The Sheriff's Department is warning the public about a man who tried to lure a 9-year-old girl into his silver convertible vehicle on Thursday, March 28th at 8 p.m. The girl was riding her bicycle on Poplin Drive in Santee when the man asked if she wanted a ride to a game, says Sergeant Kamon Harris. The girl became frightened and rode to her home, but was not injured. The suspect is described as a white man, 60 to 70 years old, with white hair. He wore a red hat and chrome sunglasses. His silver convertible had a black top and maybe a Honda. It had a handicapped license plate. If you have any information, please call Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. You can remain anonymous and be eligible for up to a $1,000 reward in this case for information leading to a felony arrest. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The San Miguel Fire Protection District's board has voted to shift from at-large elections to division elections in which each director will represent voters in a specific geographic community. The board currently has 7 directors, but staff has been asked to draw up proposals for both a 7-member board as well as a 5-member board as an option to reduce costs. The idea of division elections is to assure that everyone, including minorities, have opportunities for representation. San Miguel Fire Protection District, like many other public agencies across California, also seeks to avoid the prospect of litigation, since lawsuits have been filed against some agencies that did not adopt district elections, and all of those agencies lost in court. After rolling out proposed maps in early April, the Fire District's Board of Directors will hold public hearings on April 10th and April 24th, with adoption of a resolution approving a map and the transition to division elections expected on May 8th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. The worst ice storm in decades knocked East County's nonprofit community station, KNSJ 89.1 FM, off the air earlier this year, damaging its antenna atop Mount Laguna. Now our show airs on KNSJ along with many other local and national shows, providing independent news, views, music, and local culture. Thanks to a board member's loan, the station is back on the air, but urgently needs donations to recoup those $5,000 in costs for repairs and buying an ice shield, as well as thousands of dollars more that's needed for equipment recommended to improve reliability, boost the signal, and prevent future disruptions during emergencies when people need news the most. You can help KNSJ's people-powered radio station by making a donation at knsj.org/donate, or you can give via the KNSJ fundraising drive on GoFundMe. KNSJ's programs include nationally syndicated Democracy Now! And Tom Hartman's show, as well as local shows such as Talk of the Town, Native American programming, East County Magazine's radio show, and more. Again, you can give at knsj.org or the KNSJ fundraising drive on GoFundMe to support people-powered radio for our region, reflecting public interests, not special interests.
This is Danita Jinks with the Health Alert. Before you make your next batch of guacamole, Henry Avocado Corporation of Escondido has issued a recall on avocados. A government inspection of packing facility in California resulted in tests that were positive for listeria. The recalled products have stickers reading Bravocado on the exterior. Avocados labeled organic from Henry Avocados are not included in the recall, nor are avocados from Mexico. Listeria can cause fever, stiffness, nausea, diarrhea, and other symptoms. It can be fatal to young children, elderly people, or others with weakened immune systems. It can also cause stillbirths and miscarriages in pregnant women. The recalled products were distributed throughout California and several other states. There are no reported illnesses, but consumers are advised not to eat the recalled avocados. If you purchased any, you can return them to the retailer for a refund.
This is John Fisteer with a health alert. Hantavirus has been found in 3 deer mice in the Boulevard area in San Diego's rural East County. Wild rodents, particularly mice, are the main carriers of the disease. Hantavirus can cause deadly infections in people, and there is no vaccine or cure. Fortunately, people are unlikely to be exposed to hantavirus if they keep wild rodents out of homes, sheds, garages, and workplaces. The best way to protect yourself is to never sweep up or vacuum rodent nests or droppings. Instead, use wet cleaning methods. Wearing gloves, spray any rodent nests, droppings, rodent traps, or dead rodents and surrounding areas with a 10% bleach solution. Let the disinfectant stand for 15 minutes or more, and then clean up with a sponge or mop. Place the disinfected debris into double plastic bags, seal, and discard them. Then wash gloves in bleach, followed by soap and water, and throw them away. Last, wash your hands thoroughly with soap and water. Seal up all holes larger than a dime to keep rodents out of your home and other buildings on your property. Symptoms of hantavirus include severe muscle aches, chills and fever, headache or dizziness, difficulty breathing, coughing, respiratory problems, or respiratory failure, nausea, vomiting, or stomach pain, as well as low blood pressure. If you are experiencing these symptoms, contact your doctor and let your physician know if you may have been exposed to wild mice or rodent droppings. For more information on hantavirus, you can contact the County Department of Environmental Health, DEH, at 858-694-2888. That's 858-694-2888. Or visit the DEH hantavirus webpage.
San Diego State University has sent an email to students advising that a student has been diagnosed with mumps. Students with symptoms of mumps are urged to isolate themselves and contact a medical provider as quickly as possible. Mumps is a contagious viral illness that can be prevented through vaccinations. The symptoms include fever, headache, muscle aches, fatigue, and loss of appetite initially, followed by swelling of salivary glands that can cause puffed cheeks and a swollen sore jaw. In serious cases, mumps can cause deafness and inflammation of the brain or other organs. Student health services will be open during spring break for students who need to visit. Concerned students can also call the nurse advice line during hours when SDSU is closed, and that number is 858-225-3105. The student lives off campus and was diagnosed March 21st by a personal physician. The university did not receive notification until March 28th. The student has recovered and is no longer contagious, but may have exposed others. The MMR vaccine protects against mumps, measles, and rubella. The Centers for Disease Control recommends vaccinating children at 12 to 15 months of age and again at age 4 to 6, which reduces the risk of contracting mumps by about 88%. Mumps can be spread through coughing, sneezing, or sharing items such as water bottles and eating utensils, as well as by close contact such as dancing, kissing, or playing contact sports. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
In a recent hearing, state legislators grilled University of California staff about the university's response to the nationwide college admissions scandal. Assemblyman Kevin McCarty asked, "How do we reassure the public that the system is not totally rigged?" Lawmakers are feeling pressure to respond to a nationwide cheating scheme that cuts at the heart of higher education's legitimacy. Dozens of people have been charged by federal law enforcement with using fake test scores and athletic profiles to secure admission for wealthy students at elite colleges. One was a UCLA soccer coach and another the parent of a UC Berkeley graduate. The hearing generated strong talk of crackdowns and expulsions, but there are limits to what state government can do to prevent future scandals. State officials have little ability to influence the private schools at the center of the investigation. And even within California's public university system, key decisions about admission are made within the ivory tower by UC faculty and staff. But legislators do have significant control over UC's purse strings, and the governor and lieutenant governor sit on the UC Board of Regents. Here are three takeaways from the state's response so far as CalMatters reports. First, UC already has a small side door and will be double-checking the locks. UC policy allows campuses to admit up to 6% of each entering class with students who don't meet usual standards, but who have a special talent, such as athletics or performing arts. Those under-the-radar admissions are the kind the FBI alleges parents exploited at UC and elite private schools by bribing sports coaches to take their children. Exceptions to standard admissions policies can also be used for positive purposes, such as to increase geographical and cultural diversity by admitting students who were homeschooled or attended rural high schools that don't offer courses that UC requires. UC says it doesn't set aside any admission slots for donors or legacy students, those whose parents attended the university. UC also audits a random sampling of applications each year to ensure that information submitted is accurate. UC's chief audit officer says the university plans to scrutinize admissions by exception for fraud and make it very difficult to take advantage of the system. Second, the scandal has reignited debate over use of SAT and ACT exams in admissions. Over 1,000 colleges and universities nationwide have stopped requiring applicants to submit those test scores, but the University of California still requires them. Now, revelations that wealthy families brazenly gamed the tests has lent urgency to an ongoing discussion about their use. At the request of UC President Janet Napolitano, a faculty task force has, for several months, been studying whether standardized tests accurately predict how well a student will succeed at the university. Critics of the SAT and ACT have long argued that they perpetuate racial disparities and favor applicants whose families can afford expensive test prep courses. One option UC could pursue is relying more on smarter balance tests the state already requires students to take in 11th grade. Smarter, balanced exams do about as well as the SAT at predicting whether a student will get good grades in their first year at UC or Cal State schools, according to a UC Davis study. However, the study found both tests were less effective at predicting outcomes for low-income students, and students outside California might not have access to smarter, balanced exams. Also, in-school state assessment tests, while free and convenient for students to take, have faced cheating scandals of their own. The third key point is that athletic admissions will be under more scrutiny. UC officials say all candidates recommended by athletic coaches go through an independent review, but checks and balances seem to have failed in the case of a UCLA soccer coach indicted on suspicion of taking $200,000 in bribes to accept two recruits who had never played the sport competitively. He has been placed on leave by university officials. University admissions officers often rely on coaches' recommendations instead of contacting a student's high school to verify athletic achievement. Some experts are urging that system to change and require more faculty oversight. Assemblyman McCarty concluded, "We need to make sure the person who got on the swim team knows how to swim." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is a public service announcement from the Laubach Literary Council of San Diego. If you can speak English, you can make a difference in someone's life. The Laubach Literacy Council of San Diego County has been providing tutors for adult learners of English as a second language since 1961. The nonprofit volunteer-run organization has tutoring locations countywide, including locations in East County, home to many immigrants and refugees. Many of Laubach's locations locally need trained tutors to bring the gift of literacy to non-English speaking learners. The organization has been providing free tutors to adult learners since 1961. No experience is needed. The next training sessions will be on Saturday, May 4th and Saturday, May 11th at Claremont Covenant Church. Attendance is required at both for Laubach certification. The deadline to register is April 27th. You can register or get more information online at laubachsandiego.org, and that's spelled laubachsandiego.org. Click on the volunteer tab for details.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. My very special guest today is Bob Frank. He is the lead counsel at Neil Diamond in a class action lawsuit filed against the City of San Diego and Dockless Scooter and Bicycle Companies on behalf of people with disabilities. The suit alleges that these entities are violating rights of people under the Americans with Disabilities Act and state anti-discrimination laws. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. What a privilege to be here.
Well, we're glad that you could join us today. So, tell us why you brought this suit. What are the problems that these dockless scooters and bicycles are causing for people with disabilities in our area?
Well, something had to be done, and it was not going to be done by the scooter companies and the dockless bike companies. Something done to stop the violation of free access rights that these people in our city with disabilities have and have had for a long time. Something had to be done, and it is now being done, and we're going to pursue the enforcement of their right to have equal and free access to the public sidewalks and public thoroughfareways, just like all of us without such disabilities.
So what are some of the problems that your clients have encountered from these dockless scooters and bicycles? And tell us also a little bit about who your clients are and what sort of disabilities they have.
Well, there's a myriad of individual problems because each person has their own individual challenges, but there are some very common problems. And the essence of the problem is essentially twofold. One, there are people with disabilities who for years felt free and safe to be outside their homes, to get about in the way that they do on our public sidewalks and streets.
Right.
And now they are scared and fearful for their own safety and will not even venture out to do those things that they used to do.
That's terrible. Now, I understand that one of your clients is blind and had an accident. Tell us where that occurred and what happened to him.
He's a blind gentleman. One day he was at the Center for the Blind, ironically.
Wow, of all places that should be safe.
And it was a scooter which caused him to trip and fall in the access way outside the center.
That has to be so frightening, apart from whatever injuries. How seriously was he injured?
Well, I'm not at liberty to, in this forum, to discuss the nature of that, but his injury is not the only injury that has occurred in our community.
Right. And we should add, there have been injuries to people riding the scooters as well. There's actually been 2 deaths involving these, so they're not 100% safe for anyone. But they pose special challenges to people who may have visual or mobility challenges. Now, what about the case of people who might be relying on, say, wheelchairs?
Well, it's the same. The speed at which these scooters are allowed to travel and travel on sidewalks, which is contrary to the law.
Yeah, state law in California bans them on sidewalks, but a lot of riders are violating that, and the cities don't seem to be doing a very good job of enforcing it.
And so the speed at which these people are traveling on the scooters, it by itself is very worrisome, because you can imagine having decreased vision, being in a wheelchair or in some way not...
Yeah, a walker or walking with a cane.
Not able to react quickly with a person's normal reflexes and reactions is a disability and impairment to protect yourself.
Sure.
And I think it is fairly common knowledge that some of these people are using these scooters while under the influence of alcohol or perhaps other substances that affect their own ability and skills to ride them safely.
Yeah, they're riding them from bar to bar downtown sometimes. What about where these things are being parked?
Well, that is a great question, and that is exactly in part what our lawsuit is about, because the way these scooters are left on the sidewalks prevent the access of our clients to those sidewalks. And they pose a danger, not just preventing access, but because of how they're situated.
Yeah, they're actually blocking them.
Strewn about, thrown on their sides, collected in clumps, left in front of doorways.
Sure. So to be devil's advocate for just a moment, the other side of this question is a lot of people like the scooters. They see it as an affordable means of transit for, you know, maybe young people or visitors here to get around and to get people out of cars, reduce the greenhouse gas emissions. What would your answer be to that? Is there a way that scooters can coexist with those with disabilities, or are they simply mutually exclusive?
I believe that they can coexist with proper regulations, proper oversight by the companies deploying these devices on our public sidewalks. There are ways to get this done.
It seems that it's partly an enforcement issue, isn't it? At least as far as riding on the sidewalks, that's already illegal everywhere in California, but what does it take to get people not to do that?
Well, as you said, in part, that is the problem. Education. There are mechanisms with our technology these days that these companies have and could employ in these devices, in the scooters, in the dockless bikes, just like a golf cart on a golf course nowadays has mechanisms employed in it that prevent it from going too far astray on the golf course.
Or too fast.
Or too fast a governor. But there are boundaries that can be implemented into the systems such that the devices will not go where some of the riders want to take them.
So you could maybe take it to the beach, but it's got to stay in the parking lot and not be cruising down the boardwalk.
Exactly, Marin. We have those abilities now, and these companies know that.
Yeah.
And they have that capability.
We recently interviewed a number of city officials in East County, as well as candidates running for office, and we asked them their views on the scooters and the dockless bicycles, and these were all over the board from one candidate who admitted using one. He was actually a bit disabled himself, had an ankle injury, and said he was enjoying scooting precincts instead of walking them, all the way to another council member who'd actually been run over by one downtown herself and, you know, said she wasn't necessarily against them, but felt the need to regulate. Others who just thought, you know, we really need to crack down on these things. So if you were a city official, I'm sure there's some nervous ones maybe listening to this wondering, what do we have to do so that our city won't be the next one to get sued? Other than the obvious of enforcing not having them ridden on sidewalks, what else can be done, particularly as far as that parking situation?
Well, as you know, currently, the scooters are left on the sidewalks. They're then picked up and used. They need to be in a confined area. They need to be in an area out of the sidewalk such that they can be more adequately managed and controlled in that fashion.
Much like the bicycle racks that we see for traditional bicycles.
That seemed to work.
Yeah, we don't seem to see the problem with those. What is the remedy that you are seeking from the city of San Diego and the scooter companies in your lawsuit?
We want our clients to be made whole for what they have suffered and the deprivation of their rights to free access and use of the public ways. The sidewalks, and the other areas. We want something to be done to prevent a recurrence of what has been happening. And that is the point of the case, to stop the continuing and persistent violation of their rights.
Very good. Well, I appreciate you sharing that with us, Bob. Obviously, it's going to take a while for this class action lawsuit to work its way through the courts to whatever resolution a judge decides upon. In the meantime, what message would you want to send to people who may be listening who ride these dockless electric scooters and bicycles out there?
Safety first, convenience second. Be aware, be conscious of your fellow citizen, especially those who are not as enabled as you are physically. Be conscious, be polite, and above all, please follow the laws and protect yourself. Wear a helmet. Don't drink and ride.
Very good advice. Bob, can you give me an example or two? I understand you've witnessed some flagrant violations of the laws yourself out there regarding these scooters that put people at risk.
Well, absolutely. Not infrequently on my way home from downtown, when I turn right on 4th Avenue, which is a one-way street to head toward G Avenue, I encounter scooters coming at me in the opposite direction on a one-way street.
Oh, my goodness. And, of course, you're supposed to go with traffic on these things, in the street, in the bike lane if there is one, but always with traffic, not against it.
Exactly. If the scooters were driven according to the laws and the regulations, there'd probably be fewer injuries, accidents, and not as much fear amongst us. I personally have to look all over when I'm going downtown.
Yeah.
I've had them come running up alongside me, at me from an opposite direction, and I'm sure I'm not the only one.
Now, I've had a close call or two down there as well, and I can only imagine how much more terrifying or dangerous it would be for somebody who is mobility challenged or who's blind or who is deaf and can't hear these things coming. So thank you for sharing that with us today.
You're very welcome. You know, the point is we want to stop a crisis from becoming a full-blown crisis before it becomes so. And
before somebody is seriously injured or dies out there.
Thanks for allowing us to make this more perhaps aware of a public issue, because it really is.
Yeah, well, you're welcome. It's certainly a very important matter. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with Bob Frank, the lead counsel at Neil Diamond, a law firm that has filed a class action lawsuit against the City of San Diego and Dockless Scooter and Bicycle Companies on behalf of people with disabilities to protect their rights. I want to thank you very much, Bob, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you so much, Marion. What a privilege and honor to be in your presence and participate in this. Thank you.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
April brings springtime activities galore to East County. This week's Destination East County includes Julian Gold Rush Days, Meet the Winemaker Weekend, the Catfish Opener at Santee Lakes, a star party at Mission Trails, and a spring extravaganza with egg hunts galore.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including Cajon Classic Cruise celebrating its centennial season, Spring Harp Fest in La Mesa, and a Spring Garden and Butterfly Festival at the Water Conservation Garden. We'll also have details about Earth Day activities in Jacumba Hot Springs and in La Mesa. Plus, hear about Lakeside's Rodeo and Western Days Parade coming up and a Warbirds Expo at Gillespie Field.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The Julian Gold Rush Days Festival will take place April 6th and 7th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can try your hand at gold panning, tomahawk throwing, candle making, archery, arts and crafts, hayrides, and more at the Julian Farm. Or visit the Eagle Peak Mine and Museum to experience the life of a gold miner, including a tour inside the mine. Julian's Doves and Desperados will perform a skit at 2 p.m. in front of the Julian Jail. Of course, you can also try some apple pie, the town's new gold drawing tourists from around the world. For tickets and details, visit juliangoldrushdays.com.
April 6th and 7th is also Meet the Winemakers Weekend in Ramona. Participants can enjoy VIP tours at up to 6 wineries, plus dinner by Something Delicious Catering at Reds, Whites, and Brews, located in the heart of historic downtown Ramona, where you'll mingle with local winemakers. The two-day event also includes a continental breakfast at Ramona Naturals and snacks by Cheeses from the Cave, plus a souvenir wine glass. For tickets, you can visit RamonaValleyVineyards.com.
The Catfish Opener at Santee Lakes is set for Saturday and Sunday, April 6th and 7th. 2,000 pounds of catfish will be stocked for fishing. Plus, there will be tagged fish that you can redeem for prizes, as well as prizes for the 5 biggest catfish caught. For details, you can visit SanteeLakes.com. Air Group One, the San Diego wing of the Commemorative Air Force, will host a Warbird Expo and World War II Collectors Swap Meet at Gillespie Field in El Cajon on Saturday, April 13th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tickets for a ride in a real World War II airplane can also be purchased online or at the event.
This is the largest fundraiser of the year for Air Group One to help keep these historic World War II aircraft flying and fund youth education programs on careers in aviation. Displays will feature World War II and classic aircraft, vintage and classic cars, and local vendors. The World War II memorabilia swap meet section will have an opportunity to purchase unique artifacts and collectibles, including books, photos, toys, uniforms and insignias, aircraft parts, and more. For additional information, you can visit the Air Group One Commemorative Air Force website at ag1caf.org.
You're invited to a star party at Mission Trails Regional Park on April 13th from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Amateur astronomer George Vargas will bring his telescope to the far end of the Kumeyaay Lake Campground's day-use lot. You'll have opportunities to view galaxies, stars, and constellations. For more information, you can visit mtrp.org.
Santee Lakes is hosting its Spring Eggstravaganza with fun for the whole family on Sunday, April 14th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Children can enjoy continuous egg hunts, pony rides, a petting zoo, carnival rides, crafts, foods, and photos with bunnies. There is a nominal fee for activities and rides. Details are available at santeelakes.com.
Celebrating 100 years of cruising, Cajon Classic Cruise opens its centennial season on April 17th. You're invited to view the classic cars along Main Street and Prescott Promenade each Wednesday evening from 5 to 8 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. A full season lineup of activities will be posted soon at downtownelcajon.com.
Harmonicas will be wailing at the 20th Annual Spring Harp Fest in La Mesa's Harry Griffin Park on Saturday, April 20th from 11 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. This festival was founded to promote blues harmonica music, an American art form. Donations at the event are used to fund youth music programs with harmonicas and a summer blues camp. For a full list of performers and details, visit springharpfest.org.
An Earth Day celebration at the Desert View Tower in Hakumba Hot Springs will be held on April 20th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. This festive event will feature live music including blues, classic rock, reggae, and more, as well as Grammy-nominated medicine woman Wind Walker. There will also be wildflower hikes, healthy and vegan foods, native plants, crafts and farm products for sale, natural beauty and health therapies, and a chance to explore the Inkopa Boulder Park and its unique stone carvings. For more information and tickets, visit the Desert View Tower on Facebook at facebook.com/Desert View Tower.
The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College in Rancho San Diego invites you to its annual Spring Garden and Butterfly Festival on April 27th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Visitors can watch butterfly releases and enjoy a butterfly pavilion. There will also be plant sales, tours, crafts, vendors, story time with Miss Metamorphosis, and the Ms. Smarty Plants Pollinator Party. For full details, you can visit springgardenfestival.com.
Yeehaw! The Lakeside Rodeo on April 26th through 28th will showcase cowboy and cowgirl skills in competitions that include bareback riding, team roping, bull riding, barrel racing, saddle bronc riding, steer wrestling, and more. You can find tickets and details at lakesiderodeo.com. Now, the rodeo is all part of Lakeside's Western Days, which also includes the annual Lakeside Western Days Parade on April 27th from 9:30 a.m. to noon through historic downtown Lakeside. This parade features equestrians, floats, bands, clowns, color guards, and drill teams, local dignitaries, and more. You can find details at lakesidechamber.org.
A pedal for the Planet Trail Ride, arts and crafts, vendors, STEM activities, educational materials, a bounce house, and food trucks are all part of La Mesa's Earth Day Festival. Sponsored by the La Mesa Park and Recreation Foundation, La Mesa's Earth Day Festival will be held on Saturday, April 27th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Harry Griffin Park, 9550 Milden Street in La Mesa. The event promises fun for all ages.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. The worst ice storm in decades knocked East County's nonprofit community station, KNSJ 89.1 FM, off the air earlier this year, damaging its antenna atop Mount Laguna. Now our show airs on KNSJ along with many other local and national shows, providing independent news, views, music, and local culture. Thanks to a board member's loan, the station is back on the air, but urgently needs donations to recoup those $5,000 in costs for repairs and buying an ice shield, as well as thousands of dollars more that's needed for equipment recommended to improve reliability, boost the signal, and prevent future disruptions during emergencies when people need news the most. You can help KNSJ's people-powered radio station by making a donation at knsj.org/donate, or you can give via the KNSJ fundraising drive on GoFundMe. KNSJ's programs include nationally syndicated Democracy Now! And Tom Hartman's show, as well as local shows such as Talk of the Town, Native American programming, East County Magazine's radio show, and more. Again, you can give at knsj.org or the KNSJ fundraising drive on GoFundMe to support people-powered radio for our region, reflecting public interests, not special interests.
Lawmakers in California just introduced a first-in-the-nation bill to ban toxic chemicals in makeup and other cosmetics sold in drugstores and elsewhere in the state. Currently, it is legal for companies to sell cosmetics containing dangerous chemicals as long as they list them on the label and report them to the state. Assembly Bill 495 would make it illegal to sell these products if they contain mercury, lead, formaldehyde, asbestos, phthalates, even Teflon, any of about 20 items from California's list of Prop 65 toxics. Susan Little with the Environmental Working Group says these substances can be quite harmful.
Some of them are known carcinogens. We know that they interfere with the reproductive system. We know that they alter hormone levels, and we know that they're neurotoxins.
Last year, Claire's Stores declared bankruptcy after a report from the California Public Interest Research Group found asbestos in some of the makeup it sold. The cosmetics industry has lobbied heavily against bills at the federal level to regulate its products, although 40 other nations have adopted lists of chemicals that are banned in cosmetics. Little says the FDA claims it doesn't have the power to require recalls or take direct action, so in essence, the feds trust the cosmetics industry to police itself.
In fact, there was a press release the FDA just issued that just directly states that when it comes to cosmetics, the FDA holds little authority. And this is their quote. Currently, there are no legal requirements for any cosmetic manufacturer marketing products to American consumers to test their products for safety.
The Environmental Working Group has tested a large number of products and rated them for safety. You can see the group's Skin Deep database on its website at ewg.org/skindeep. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk today about some plants you can plant to bring in hummingbirds. Everybody loves them. Nobody wants to fill those feeders. They get ants in them, they get bees in them, they get mold in them. And someday I'll convince my husband to quit putting sugar water in them and feeding them, because there's enough in my yard to keep every hummingbird in East County quite happy for quite a while. So what do you want to put in your yard that will bring in the hummingbirds? My favorite plant is a cultivar of a native plant. It is called Galvezia firecracker. If you go to most nurseries nowadays, this plant has become so popular that you can get it. Just ask for firecracker, which is different than Russellia. It's a Galvezia, G-A-L-V-E-Z-I-A. This is a plant that gets to be about 4 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and it has red tubular flowers. And that's the key, isn't it? Red tubular flowers. That's what brings in the hummingbirds. They love it. Can't stay away from them. This is a much more manageable and nice plant than the Cape honeysuckle with the big orange flowers and the plant that gets to be 15 feet tall and 20 feet wide and goes everywhere and is a big floppy mess. Try a firecracker and see what you think. You can grow it in the sun, in the shade, in part sun, in part shade, with a lot of water or with just a little bit of water, and it will be fine.
I have a neighbor who grows it under pepper trees, and the gardeners come every week and prune them into little round balls, and they never really get to bloom, and those trees have suffered through that for the last few years without a single one of them dying. Now, that's what I would call an obliging plant. Another good plant that will bring in lots and lots of wildlife to your garden, and hummingbirds especially, is called California fuchsia. It's called Epilobium. Some of you may have known it in the past as Zauschneria. What a great name. So there's a good password for you, Zauschneria. Who's going to use a word like that for their password? Zauschnerias, or Epilobiums, California fuchsia, are a gray plant, and they have a bright orange-red tubular flower. Once again, great for hummingbirds, really keeps them happy. This is a plant that will actually spread slightly on its own and will get by even if something bad happens to the irrigation and nobody irrigates it for 6 weeks or 6 months. It won't die. It'll be fine. Anytime you go to a nursery, look around and look for the plants that have the red tubular flowers. That's the key to hummingbirds. Now, my friend Maureen Austin, who puts on the Sage and Songbirds Festival every year, says there's two kinds of wildlife attracting plants out there. There's ice cream cones, which we're talking about now. These are the tubular shaped flowers that the hummingbirds like. Or there's pizzas, and pizzas are the flat flowers, the daisy-type flowers that you see butterflies landing on. If you think about butterfly bush, Buddleia, which brings in all sorts of cute little butterflies, it also is fragrant. It's known as summer lilac here, or butterfly bush. Then if you take a close look at those purple spikes that grow on that, that bring in the butterflies, you'll see a whole bunch of little bitty flowers. And that's what the butterflies are landing on. That's what they like. So that's a great one. Probably the best butterfly plant that you can come up with, though, is always going to be the butterfly weed, milkweed, Asclepias curassavica. It has orange and red flowers on it, and it just grows like a weed in your garden. Not invasive, just reseeds very effectively. You will know that you have succeeded when you see interesting looking green caterpillars all over the plant, eating every leaf. In my garden, I pick them off and I move them to another milkweed after they eat all the leaves off one. I don't try to fight them because they're going to turn into monarch butterflies. So my garden is full of monarch butterflies, which I consider to be flying flowers. So keep in mind, butterfly milkweed is a great plant to add to your garden repertoire.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.